Recorded.
Okay, so we're recording. Good evening, everyone. As we know, the Daf Yomi has started Moed Katan a few weeks, 2 weeks ago, approximately 2 weeks ago. And the first half of the Masechta of Moed Katan speaks about Moed Katan. Moed Katan, the small, the minor part of the Yom Tif, the Moed Katan, the smaller part of the Yom Tif, which is the Chol HaMoed. And we know that Chol HaMoed is a quasi-Yom Tif. There are certain things that we're allowed to do, and there are certain things that we're not allowed to do.
Conference will now be recorded.
That's Ezra, that's it. Something's wrong. Okay, so on Chol HaMoed, certain malachas we're allowed to do, and certain malachas we're not permitted to do. So, Imit Hashem, over the next couple of times, next couple of weeks, we'll try to go into more detail what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do. But there are basic categories of things that we are allowed to do. For example, we're allowed to do tzarchei rabim. We're allowed to do malachas that are relevant for the public. We're allowed to take care of public needs. So the Mishnah discusses, for example, paving the roads, fixing the mikvos. Chol HaMoed is a time where people are off. Chol HaMoed is a time people have more, they have more free time on their hands. So the Beis Din would dedicate this time, this week of Chol HaMoed, to fixing public facilities, the public works, digging wells for people, for the community that needed, and things of that nature back in the day. And these things are permitted. Another category of malacha that we know is permitted is tzarech hamoed, things that you need to do for that day. And there's an interesting twist that you're allowed to perform maleches hedyot, layman's work, not professional work, but layman's work. We know another thing that's permitted is ochel nefesh, of course. You're allowed to cook, you're allowed to do things for food, even on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do that. Another permissible category of work is dover ha'avud. Sam, this is what we were speaking about earlier. A dover ha'avud means that you're not required to incur a loss. And Imit Hashem in future shiurim will discuss what qualifies as incurring a loss and what qualifies as merely forfeiting profit. We'll speak about that. Now, there's an interesting twist that even if you are permitted to perform certain malachas to avoid a loss, but you can't do tircha. You can't do tircha. You can't have an overexert yourself. It's actually very hard to define how much tircha, how much effort and exertion you're allowed to exert to avoid loss and how much not. The Gemara makes distinctions between tircha, and then there's another important caveat that you can't schedule maintenance or things to prevent the loss for Chol HaMoed. It has to be that it sort of just crept up on you and you realize it was unavoidable that on Chol HaMoed you need to perform certain labors in order to avoid a loss. But if you schedule it for Chol HaMoed, then you wouldn't be allowed to perform those necessary malachas if you scheduled it specifically for Chol HaMoed. That's considered kivein malachtoi lemoed. Another interesting halacha is a poel she'en li ma'yach yoicha. If you have a worker who simply needs to earn money for his livelihood, so again, we permit malacha. So Chol HaMoed is a very interesting time where certain things are permitted and certain things are not. So the question is, what's the basis for this? Where do we derive this? How do we know? How do we arrive at these parameters of what's permitted and what's not? So I would like to go through some of the sources from the Gemara, primarily from the Gemaras and the Rishonim, the different references to Chol HaMoed in the Gemaras, and how the Rishonim approach this, the broad strokes. We're not going to get into details, but the broad strokes, what the sources in the Torah and in the Gemaras, how to define if Chol HaMoed is the Raisa or the Rabbanan. How do we put our finger on Chol HaMoed? So the first Marum Makom, the first source, is actually a Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Yud Ches Amar Aleph, and all the Rishonim bring this Gemara. This is a key Gemara when we're discussing the halachas of Chol HaMoed. The Rush and the Rif all bring this. They quote the entire sugya of Chagiga in the very beginning of Moed Katan. And let's learn some of the sources from that Gemara in Chagiga. So says the Gemara. This is the Gemara in Chagiga, Daf Yud Ches Amar Aleph. Chol HaMoed Asur Ba'asiyas Malacha. So we all know that we're not allowed to perform various malachas on Chol HaMoed. How do we know this? Where does it say that we can't perform malachas on Chol HaMoed? Perhaps Chol HaMoed is like an ordinary weekday. Says the Gemara, the Tanu Rabbanan, because we learned in a Braisa, Es Chag HaMatzos Tishmor. You should observe the holiday of Chag HaMatzos, Pesach, Shivas Yamim, for 7 days. It's a 7-day-long Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, right there, that's a makar that Chol HaMoed is aser b'asiyas malacha. The pasuk says, Tishmor, you have to guard, you have to observe all 7 days of Pesach. Limit al Chol HaMoed sh'aser b'asiyas malacha. This teaches us clearly that you're not allowed to perform malacha on Chol HaMoed because the pasuk says you have to observe all 7 days of Pesach. Dibrei Rabbi Yoshia, those are the words of Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonasan Oimer, Rabbi Yonasan says, Einu tzarech. It's unnecessary. Rabbi Yonasan says that it's obvious that there is a malacha prohibition on Chol HaMoed, and says Rabbi Yonasan, a kal v'chomer, a very interesting derivation. Says Rabbi Yonasan, kal v'chomer. We can derive it through a kal v'chomer. It's obvious that Chol HaMoed is subject to a prohibition of malacha, and he says the following, Ma rishonu shvi'i, because the first day of Pesach and the seventh day of Pesach, She'ein kedusha lifneihem ule'achreihem, where they themselves, the first day and the seventh day, are not themselves surrounded by kedusha. Erev Pesach is not a Yom Tov. Mitzoi Pesach is not a Yom Tov. So the first day of Pesach and the last day of Pesach are not surrounded by days of kedusha. They're not sandwiched in between days of kedusha. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to perform malacha on the first day or the seventh day. So it follows, Chol HaMoed, Sheyesh Kedusha Lifneim Olachrem, Chol HaMoed, which is surrounded, it's sandwiched between 2 days of Kedusha, the first day and the seventh day, Einu Din, Sheyeh Yasser V'Asiyas Malacha, would certainly be Asir V'Asiyas Malacha. How could it's a fascinating line of reasoning. How could the first day of Pesach be more Asir in Malacha than Chol HaMoed? Because the first day of Pesach is not surrounded by Kedusha, while the days of Chol HaMoed themselves are sandwiched in between Kedusha. That's Rabbi Yonasan's Kal V'Chomer. It's a fascinating, we never would have looked at it that way. The Gemara asks the obvious question, which I didn't print here. The Gemara says, then how are you allowed to perform Malacha on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday? These days are also surrounded by Kedusha because you have a Shabbos before and a Shabbos after. So how come you're allowed to perform Malacha even on Chol HaMoed? So the Gemara there says because the days of the week don't have a Korban Musaf and not referred to as Moed. So we have to add a little bit to Rav Yonasan's Drasha that if the days of Chol HaMoed are themselves called Mikroi Kodesh and there's a Korban Musaf, plus they're surrounded by days of Kedusha, so Rav Yonasan's logic is that it follows that there should be a prohibition of Malacha on Chol HaMoed. Okay, so that's one Braisa. There's another Braisa, Tanya Idach, another Braisa, it's all there in Chagiga. Kol Meleches Avoida, Kol Meleches Avoida Loisasu, the Pasuk says, you can't perform any Meleches Avoida. Limid Al Chol Shalmoed She'asar B'Asiyas Malacha. Again, this Pasuk, which is referring to Malacha of Yom Tov, Kol Meleches Avoida Loisasu, is also referring to Chol HaMoed. These are the words of Rabbi Yosi Aglili. And again, Rabbi Kiva counters, Eino Tzorech, that Pasuk is not necessary, Harehu Oimer, because the Pasuk says, Eila Moyadei Hashem. The Pasuk says, these are the holidays of Hashem. Bameh HaKasuv Medaber, what is the Pasuk speaking about? Im Berishoin, if the Pasuk, when the Pasuk says, Eilu Moyadei Hashem, these are the Yom Tovim, the holidays, the designated times of Hashem. If the Pasuk is referring to the first day of Yom Tov, Harei Kfar Nemar, Shabbosoin, it says the first day of Yom Tov is a Shabbosoin, is a Yom Tov. im Bishvi'i, if the pasuk is referring to the seventh day, Harei Kvar Nemar Shabbosin, it already says clearly that the seventh day is a day of rest, is a Yom Tov. So why does the pasuk have to say again, Eila Moya de Hashem? So Ho'ena Kasev and Davar Eila V'Cholol Shomoyet, again, these extra words designating the entire Yom Tov as a Moed must be speaking about Chol HaMoed, Lametcha. This teaches you Sha'asr B'Asiyas Malacha, that there must be some minimal prohibition of Malacha in order to refer to it as a Moed. So that's a Raya that Chol HaMoed is Asr. Various drushes, one after the other. Tanya Idach, Item Gimel, Sheshes Yamim Toichal Matzois. For 6 days you should eat matzah. We know that Pesach is a 7 day holiday. The Pasuk says for 6 days you should eat matzah, Ubiyom HaShvi'i Atzeres Lashem. And on the seventh day, it's an atzeres. We're held back from doing malacha. So we learn, mashvi'i. The word atzeres, by the way, has a lot of meanings to it. Some say, some mafarshim explain the word atzeres to mean it's a day of gathering. This Gemara here is describing atzeres, that it's held back, it's atzur, it's held back from being able to perform malacha. So just like the pasuk singles out the seventh day from the other 6 days of Pesach, mashvi'i atzur, just like the seventh day is held back, we're restricted from performing malacha, af sheshes yomim atzurim, so too, all the 6 days, the first 6 days of Pesach, we're also restricted and held back from performing malacha. Ima shvi'i atzur b'chol malacha, so if the seventh day, if we're comparing the first 6 days of Pesach to the seventh, so let's compare it all the way. If the seventh day is a full-fledged Yom Tov, and we can't perform any of the malachas on Yom Tov, so af sheishes yom matzurim mikol malacha, so perhaps we should say that Chol HaMoed as well, we're held back and restricted from performing any malacha. So Talmud Loimar uba yom ha-shvi'i hatzeres, that's why the pasuk singles out the seventh day. The seventh day is held back. So on the one hand, the Torah compares the first 6 days of Pesach to the seventh day. On the other hand, the pasuk differentiates the seventh day from the first 6 days. Shvi'i atzur b'kol malacha. Only the seventh day is held back. We're restricted from performing malacha. Ein shishi yom atzur b'kol malacha. But the first 6 days, we're not held back. So now here is a very powerful line, and this is a famous line. Haloi masrun hakasav ela lechacham. The Torah was deliberately vague. The Torah did not give us detail. The pasuk, on the one hand, implies that the 6 days, the days of Chol, the intermediate days, are compared to the seventh day, that it's forbidden to perform halacha. But on the other hand, the Torah clearly singles out the first and the seventh as being the days that are truly Yom Tov. So where do we stand? Where what are we left with? Are the Chol HaMoed days forbidden, or are the Chol HaMoed days permitted? So the Gemara says, Haloi masrun hakasuv ela lechacham. The Torah was deliberately vague, and the Torah gave Chol HaMoed over to the Rabbanan. It gave the Rabbanan the authority to determine through their seichel, through their das Torah. The Torah authorized the Rabbanan to determine which malachas should be aser, which malachas should be mutter. The Gemara says, Loi masrun hakasuv ela lechacham. This is a very famous statement describing Chol HaMoed. Loi masrun hakasuv ela lechachamim. Loi malacha, to tell you eze yoim asur ve'eze yoim mutter. So first of all, the chachamim are authorized to determine the calendar. So they're able to determine when Pesach or Sukkot starts and when it ends. Eze yoim asur ve'eze yoim mutter. When does Pesach start altogether? And furthermore, within the Pesach itself, eze malacha asura, ve'eze malacha mutares, which malachas are forbidden on Chol HaMoed and which malachas are permitted. So we have all of these ideas that Chol HaMoed is Chag HaMatzos Tishvor. The pasuk implies we should observe the entire 7 days holiday, implying that there's some observance that applies to the entire 7 days. On the other hand, the Torah singles out the first day and the seventh day as being unique. Clearly, Chol HaMoed is not the same level of sanctity as the rest of the Yom Tov. We have Rabbi Yonason's Kal V'Chomer that if the 2 days on either end are usher in Malacha, so certainly some of that prohibition of Malacha should rub off onto the Chol HaMoed, because the Chol HaMoed is sandwiched in between the 2 days of Chol HaMoed. We bring a Karban Musaf It's a holiday. It's referred to as a moed and a kroy kodesh. So certainly some of that kedusha should rub off into the intermediate days, and it should result in a prohibition of some malacha. Some it should be reflected somehow in chol hamoed. The other brisa says that we compare the intermediate days of chol hamoed to the two other days. But on the other hand, it's not a complete comparison. The Gemara concludes, loy masur nakosav elo chachamim. Just like the chachamim have the ability to determine through the calendar when Pesach and Sukkot start, because they determine the calendar, so too they can also determine the chol hamoed, the intermediate days, what malacha is mutter and what malacha is aser. So in item Dalet, if you would be reading this Gemara in Chagiga, and if you read the Rishonim who quote all of these drushes from the various psukim, it would seem that the malacha, the prohibitions of the malacha of chol hamoed are doiraisa, are from the Torah. If a person would do something on chol hamoed that he's not allowed to do, it would be like being mechalal yomtiv. It would be an iser doiraisa, because after all, we're learning the prohibitions of chol hamoed from the other days, from the Torah. How do we know what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do? So that the Gemara says, Masru HaKasav L'Chachamim. The Chachamim are able to determine what's mutter and what's aser. But it seems that whatever is aser, it would be an iser deraisa. Sam, you want to mention something? You're muted.
What is the
Gemara?
What is the correct translation of
the Torah gave the authority to the Chachamim to determine. Masar means to give over. The Torah gave the chol hamoed over to the Chachamim, authorized the Chachamim to determine what's forbidden and what's permitted. Now, in item Hay, there's another Gemara that also implies very strongly that the malacha of chol hamoed is an Isser Doraisa. So the beginning of the second parak of Chol Hamoed, Reish Parak Beis, Yud Aleph Amud Beis, 11b. So there's a cryptic Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Misha Hopach Ezesav, someone who is turning his olives. So apparently you have the olives, you put them into the, you turn them over, and somehow that softens the olives and it prepares the olives to be pressed. Once you turn the olives over and you start rolling the olives, so then you reach the point of no return, that now you have to press the olives. If not, they're going to spoil. So it's a davar ha'avod. So the Mishnah describes that the person, the man, the farmer, the producer, he turned the olives, ve'eru evel, and lo yaleinu, he became an avel. Sam, this might be the Gemara you were referring to. The man became an avel, and he's no longer permitted to do malacha. An avil is supposed to sit shiva all 7 days. And in the meantime, his olives are sitting there waiting to be pressed. And he's at risk of a tremendous loss. Now the Mishnah takes a turn, digresses. And the Mishnah says, Oy oynis, oy shitu poyalim. What happens if before Yomtif, he had some kind of oynis, something came up suddenly that he wasn't able to continue the process of producing the oil? He turned over the olives, but he didn't get a chance to press. An oinus happened, something beyond his control happened. Or his workers tricked him. They quit on the job, they left him high and dry. They turned over the olives. He was relying on the workers to press the olives. And they ditched him, they quit. They quit in midstream, and now he has all of these olives that are sitting there waiting to be pressed. It's Yom Tov now, it's Chol Hamoed now. You're normally not allowed to perform labor on Chol Hamoed. What should he do? So the Mishnah is a very cryptic Mishnah. The Mishnah first starts off that he readied his olives to be pressed, and he himself became an avil. Then the Mishnah doesn't say what to do. The Mishnah digresses and says that he prepared his olives to be pressed before Yom Tov. He was planning, he intended to complete the procedure, the Yom Tov, to produce the oil before Yom Tov, but then an ones happened, something beyond his control, or his workers tricked him, they quit on him, and he's left with all of this work before Yom Tov. So the Mishnah switches from Ovel to Chol Hamoed. So what's the halacha on Chol Hamoed? So this is the famous halacha. In order to avoid a loss, Toein Kora Rishona, he's allowed to press the olives once with the heavy press. He can be Toein Kora Rishona. He can put them into the machine once, and that gets out the bulk of the oil, and that will avoid the considerable loss that he's allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. And the rest of the olives, the rest of the process can wait till after the moed. Rabbi Yossi says, no, Zoylef, he's allowed to pour all of the olives into the machine, the goymer, and he can complete the process, not just the first round of press. He can complete the process, the gof kedarkoi, and he can even seal the barrels. So Rabbi Yossi is very lenient that when there's a dovera of it, in order to avoid a loss, he's allowed to the olives were already readied for the process. Now he's going to suffer a loss. He's allowed to completely press the olives, squeeze out the oil, process the oil, and package them and seal the barrels. Now the Gemara asks the question that the Mishnah is very unclear. First, the Mishnah starts that he became an Avel, and the Mishnah does not tell us what happens then. He had his olives, he turned over his olives, he rolled the olives, he was about to press them, he became an Avel. It doesn't say what to do. Then the Mishnah goes on and tells us what to do if unexpectedly he's left with this job on Chol HaMoed. Posach be'Avel v'sayim b'Moed. The Mishnah starts talking about an Avel, and it doesn't tell us what the outcome is. The Mishnah switches in mid-gear to Chol HaMoed. So we have a Machlokes. Omer Rav Shisha Brei Rav Idi Zoyser Meres. This teaches us that Dvarim Hamutarim B'Moed Asurim B'Mei Evloi. So it's a fascinating style of the Mishnah. The reason why the Mishnah starts with Avel and concludes with Chol HaMoed is in order to deliberately contrast the two. That Chol HaMoed is more lenient than Avelus. Says Rav Shisha Brei Rav Idi, the Mishnah is deliberately teaching us that which you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed, you're not allowed to do Bimei Evloi. So if Lo Yaleinu, a person's an Avel, he's not allowed to perform the Malacha himself, he has to sit Shiva, even if it would mean incurring a loss. The Gemara goes on to say that somebody else should do it for him, but the Avel himself should continue sitting Shiva. But on Chol HaMoed, the halacha is that you're allowed to press the olives yourself because you're allowed to do it to avoid a loss. That's what Rav Shisha Brei Rav Idi says. Rav Ashi says, and this is the Gemara that I want to bring out the point, Loi mi boi komer. No, the Mishnah is teaching us one thing at a time. It goes without saying that an Avel is allowed to get up from his shiva in order to press his own olives to avoid a loss. Because the prohibition to perform a lacha for an avel is clearly only derabbanan. So you can certainly step out of the avelus and do what needs to be done to avoid a loss. Elafilu Chol HaMoed, the iser malacha midoy raisa. The iser malacha of Chol HaMoed is midoy raisa. Still, the Mishnah is teaching us that in order to avoid a loss, the rabbis permitted it. So according to Rav Ashi, you know why the Mishnah starts off with an Avel and concludes with Chol HaMoed? Because it's like a progressional chiddush. Not only is an Avel allowed to perform a lacha to avoid a loss, you can even perform a lacha on Chol HaMoed. What's the even? Why is it a bigger chiddush on Chol HaMoed? Because Avelus, the prohibition to work as an Avel, is only Nisa Durabana, but the prohibition to work on Chol HaMoed is Nisa Duraisa. So you would see from here, from all of these sources, that the Malacha of Chol HaMoed is Duraisa. In the case when it's forbidden with Duraisa. And somehow the rabbis have the authority to permit the Isser Malacha in order to avoid a loss. It's a tremendous concept. That's what these sources would indicate. The Gemara is in Chagiga, and the Gemara at the beginning of the second parak clearly says that the prohibition of Chol HaMoed is derisa. The problem is that there's a stira. The problem is that there are conflicting mashmoisim. The Gemara implies otherwise elsewhere. The Gemara says in other places that the malacha of Chol HaMoed, the prohibitions of malacha and Chol HaMoed are only derabbanan. It's only rabbinic. So let's look at those. Let's look at those inferences. In item Vav, there are Gemaras that seem to say that the prohibition of Malacha is only Durabbanan. So look in the Gemara, Yud Beis Amud Beis. It's a fascinating Gemara in its own right. The Gemara tells us, and here's another example of a Davar Ha'avud. Here's another example where we permit you to perform Malacha in order to avoid a loss. Shoyla Pishtonei Min HaMishra B'Shvil Shaloi Toiva. that if the person had his flax soaking in the vat, so you're preparing the flax. The flax, the linen, is a plant, so they used to soak it, and that makes the that's part of the process of producing the flax, making it a material. So he's soaking the flax in a vat. You can't soak it indefinitely. You have to take it out and process it, otherwise it'll begin to rot. So if the flax is soaking in the vat, and you realize that I better deal with the flax, otherwise I'm going to lose all of that merchandise. So it says that you're allowed to remove it from the vat and do whatever you need to do in order to prevent the loss. Here's the thing. Ubilvad shlo yechaven es melachtoi b'moyed. Provided, and this is what we mentioned before, provided that you didn't schedule this for Chol HaMoed. You can't deliberately schedule necessary maintenance or things that need to be done to avoid a loss for Chol HaMoed. You cannot deliberately schedule it. It has to be the way the Mishnah described, that you planned on removing it from the vat before either the workers quit or some other unforeseeable circumstance arose and you weren't able to complete the job. Now you can use Chol HaMoed to do the things you need to do to avoid a loss. But you cannot deliberately schedule it for Chol HaMoed if you could have avoided it otherwise. Now, the Gemara has a fascinating question. The Gemara says, Boy minei Rav Yirmiyah mirab zeira. Kivin malachta b'moed. Imagine if a person violated this. The person deliberately scheduled necessary jobs and maintenance. If he doesn't do it, he'll suffer a loss. The problem was that he deliberately scheduled these tasks for Chol HaMoed. So the halacha would be that he's not allowed to do it, right? You can't. We told you, you're not allowed to deliberately schedule these necessary tasks for Chol HaMoed. It should have been done before. Only if something unforeseeable happens do we let you do it on Chol HaMoed. But you can't deliberately schedule it for Chol HaMoed. Dover of it, you can't kivin melachta b'moed. What happens if the man deliberately scheduled necessary maintenance for Chol HaMoed? Umes. And then he died. See, he's out of the picture. His children inherited the flax or the field or whatever we're discussing, or the olives that need to be pressed, all of these things that would incur a loss. The father deliberately planned it. He did something wrong. He would not have been able to do the task himself. But now that he died and he's out of the picture, the children didn't do anything wrong. They have now their inheritance, which is at risk of being forfeited, of being ruined. Are they allowed, after the fact, are they allowed to perform the necessary tasks on Chol HaMoed? Kivin malachta b'moed umes. The person deliberately scheduled it for Chol HaMoed. He would not have been allowed to perform the task, but then he died. Mahu shiyiknesu banav acharav. Do we penalize the heirs, the children? They didn't do anything wrong. So the Gemara describes there, do we say, is the penalty, because you scheduled it for Chol HaMoed deliberately, is the penalty on the man? And since the man died, we don't have to penalize the children. Now the children have an estate. They have property that's at risk of being ruined. So perhaps they can file for the Davar HaAvad exemption, and they're allowed to perform the Malacha on Chol HaMoed. Or did Chazal penalize the money? Were they mafsid the money? Is the Knas on the Gavra? Is the Knas on the man who violated, who deliberately scheduled it for Chol HaMoed? So he's the one who can't perform the Malacha as long as it's his money. But they didn't penalize the actual money. If the money changes hands, the Yorshim, the heirs, the children, they should be allowed to protect, to salvage the money. Or was the knas on the money itself? It's as if the Rabbanan were mafker, hefker, bezin, hefker. The Rabbanan, they penalized the money. They took the money away and they say you can't salvage. That's the question. So the Gemara looks for analogies, and the Gemara says like this. Well, let's look at another case. The halacha is that back in the day, if you had a bechor was a firstborn animal, and it has a kedusha. We know that if a cow gives birth to an egel, a male, the firstborn male, or a sheep or a goat, the firstborn male has a certain kedusha. Now, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, wonderful, you give the unblemished animal to a kohen. The kohen would offer it as a sacrifice, and he would be able to enjoy, to eat most of the meat. It would be similar to a carbon shlamim. So whenever there's a firstborn animal, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, it was a beautiful thing. You would offer it as a carbon to Hashem, and the Kohen would be able to enjoy the meat. There was no stress, there was no exertion, there was no overhead. Very simple. Nowadays, it's a big problem. Because imagine if your cow gives birth to a firstborn male. What are you going to do with this cow? It's a carbon. It has kedusha. And we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. What are you going to do with this carbon bechar? It has a certain kedusha. You can give it to a Kohen, but what's the Kohen going to do with it? So in the meantime, you have to feed the animal. You can't work or shear the animal. So the animal is just going to sit there. Imagine having a goat that you're stuck with and you can't do anything with it. You can't milk it. You can't work it. You can't shear the sheep. You can't do anything. It's just a loss. It's just an overhead. What are you going to do with this pet goat now that you have running around in your backyard? So it's very tempting for the Kohen to deliberately inflict a blemish onto the Bechor, and which would be an Isser D'oraisa, by the way. Inflicting a blemish, ruining the carbon, would be an Isser D'oraisa. But it's very tempting for the Kohen to deliberately inflict the blemish, because that would permit you to shech the animal, even though there's no Beis Mikdash. Once it has a blemish, then the Kedusha is removed, and the Kohen is allowed to shech the animal like any other animal and eat the animal. So if you're stuck with this Bechor, which has a Kedusha, what are you going to do with it? So the Kohen might secretly inflict the blemish in order to enable him to shech the animal and eat the animal as chulin, as an ordinary animal. So the rabbis came along and said that if the Kohen ever inflicts a blemish, he's still not allowed to use the animal. They chotei nisker. We don't want the sinner to benefit. So they penalized him that even if he inflicts a blemish, he's not allowed to use the animal. By the way, nowadays, we don't want to have this problem. We don't want to have this temptation. So what we do is a farmer normally does is he's makneh. He gives a piece of the mother animal to a non-Jew. And if you give a piece of the animal to the non-Jew, he partners with a non-Jew. That will exempt the owner from the Bechor obligation, and it circumvents the problem altogether. The Gemara is talking about a case where you neglected to do that. You were pusheya. The animal gave birth to a firstborn. We have a Bechor in front of us. What are you going to do with this Bechor? So imagine if somebody secretly, in the middle of under the cover of night, inflicted a blemish on this animal, and then he wakes up the next morning, oh, it has a blemish, Baruch Hashem, it got a blemish, I'm allowed to slaughter the animal and eat the animal, problem solved. Says the Chachamim that if the person inflicts a blemish on the Bechor, they penalized him. So the Gemara has the same question. What if the father inflicted a wound on the animal, he rendered a blemish onto the animal, and now the animal would technically be permissible, but we penalize. And then the man died, and his children inherit the animal. Are they allowed to benefit from the sin of the father? Are they allowed to eat the animal now, to shecht it and eat the animal, because it has a blemish? They're not the ones who inflicted the animal with a blemish. It was the father who did. So are they allowed to benefit from the sin of the father? So the Gemara says that these two cases, the person deliberately scheduled his forbidden malacha for Chala Moed. He set up a situation of Davar HaAvod for Chala Moed, and then he died. Can his children salvage the property? It's very similar to the case of where the man inflicted a blemish to the animal. Could the children benefit from the sin of the father? But the Gemara says you can't compare. Why? There's one critical difference between the two. Even if you say that the children are not allowed to benefit from the sin of the father, and the children are not allowed to slaughter, to shecht the Bechor, by virtue of the mum that the father inflicted, that's different. Because inflicting a mum on a Bechor is an Isser D'oraisa. The father violated an Isser D'oraisa. That's possibly that's why we would even penalize the sons, that they can't benefit from this Bechor period. They kansin the money. They put the knas on the object because the father violated Nisa Duras. However, when it comes to Chala Moed, The implication clearly being that the father, by scheduling the Davar HaAvod for Chol HaMoed, he merely violated an Isser D'Rabbanan. He didn't violate it. It's not as bad as inflicting a mum on a bechor. He only violated an Isser D'Rabbanan. This Gemara clearly implies that the Meleches Chol HaMoed is at best an Isser D'Rabbanan. So we have a contradiction. The Gemaras that derive the prohibition of Chol HaMoed from the sources of the Torah. The Gemara says in the beginning of the second perek that if we compare the prohibition of Malacha on Chol HaMoed to the prohibition of the Malacha of an Avel, one is Duraisa, one is Durabana. But then at the same time, the Gemara says, if we compare the prohibition of Chol HaMoed to the prohibition of inflicting a mum is Duraisa, Chol HaMoed is only Durabana. So which one is it? Are the prohibited malachas of Chol HaMoed, are they Duraisa or are they Durabana? There's a fascinating Yerushalmi that the Yerushalmi bring. This should be Perek Beis Halacha Gimel, in the second Perek of Moed Katan in the Yerushalmi. The Gemara says a fascinating thing, and it's very interesting because the Gemara in the Yerushalmi says the exact same thing regarding Tisha B'Av. It's a very fascinating Gemara. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo, Ilu Hoyoli Mishim Ne'imi, says Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo, a powerful statement. It's a Musar. It's a Musar Haskel to us. Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo says, if it would be up to me, I would waive the prohibition of Malacha on Chol HaMoed. I would allow people, you know what? Go to work on Chol HaMoed. Do whatever you need to do. Mow your lawn on Chol HaMoed. Whatever you need to do, just go ahead and do it. Even though it's prohibited to do Malacha Chol HaMoed, if it would be up to me, I would just say, you know what? Let's forget about it. Go back to work. Go do whatever you need to do on Chol HaMoed. Forget about it. Why? So says Rav Abba Bar Mamel, it's a Musar to us. Klum asru malacha b'chol HaMoed. Why did the sages prohibit malacha on Chol HaMoed? Ela kadeshu oichlin v'shoysin usmeichin. It's because we should observe the day. We should have a festive meal. We should drink. We should enjoy the Yom Tif. We should get close to Hashem. Smeichim. We should rejoice in the Yom Tif and rejoice in the mitzvahs. V'yegiyam b'toyra. We should make a seder and we should learn Torah. Why did Hashem give us time off on Chol HaMoed? In order that we should get close to Him, that we should have the festive meal, the sudis of Yom Tif, we should have the drink, the wine, the simcha, ain't simcha el b'yayin, we should have free time to learn Torah. So Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel bemoans the fact, ve'inon oichlin v'shoysin opoichazim, but we eat and drink, and we just whittle the time away on Chol HaMoed. We look back, what did we accomplish on Chol HaMoed? It's a Musar Haskil. So Rav Abba Bar Mamel says, if it will be up to me, I would just encourage everybody to just go back to work, keep yourself busy, and just do whatever you need to do. Why? Because the whole reason why they prohibited Malacha on Chol HaMoed was in order to give it the sense of a Yom Tif, that we should spend the day getting close to Hashem, Oichlin Shoysin, and learning Torah, davening, getting close to Hashem. Instead, we just seem to whittle the time away. So go back, better to go back to work. Now, how could Rav Abba Bar Mamel possibly say such a thing? What do you mean if it would be up to him, he would tell us to go to it? Would Rav Abba Bar Mamel say such a thing about Shabbos? Would Chas V'Shalom anybody say, if it would be up to me, I would tell you to just go off and work on Shabbos? You can't, it's an Asa Deraisa. So the Rishonim bring the Yushalmi, that the Yushalmi seems to say that the prohibition of Malacha on Chol HaMoed is only Derabanan, and Rav Abba Bar Mamel was campaigning, so to speak, to abolish the Isser Derabanan, because it's better just to keep everybody, to keep ourselves busy. That's Rav Abba Bar Mamel. But by the way, Rav Abba Bar Mamel said the same thing. The Gemara says the same thing regarding Tisha B'Av, that there's a minig not to perform Malacha on Tisha B'Av. The Gemara says the same thing. If it would be up to me, I would have said that let's just waive those prohibitions. Let's go back to learning what we normally learn. Let's go back to doing what we normally do, because we tend not to spend Tisha B'Av properly anyway. Sam, you want to comment?
Rav
Abba Bar Mamel. Mamel. Bar, the son of. The son of Mamel.
You've got two devices running at the same time, and that's where the echo is coming from.
Rav Abba Bar Mamel.
M-A-M-E-L.
Rav Abba Bar Mamel. Okay. So this would be another source that the prohibition of Malacha on Chol HaMoed is only rabbinic. So I just summarized in item Ches, there's a stira in the Mekoiris, there's a contradiction in the sources. Is the malacha of Chol HaMoed deraisa, or is the malacha, is the prohibition of Chol HaMoed only derabanan? Says the Rush, in order to reconcile this, the Rush says in the beginning of Moed Katan, another kasha. And this is a fascinating kasha. I wrote it down. Let's read it together in item tests. Hayakashal Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam has another question. Until now, we were really asking questions based on the sources. One place it says it's deraisa, another place it says it's only derabanan. There's conflicting sources. The Rabbeinu Tam has a kasha misvara. He has a kasha, a logical question. He has a question based on his understanding. Says Rabbeinu Tam, Ihavi deraisa, how could it be that the malacha of Chol HaMoed, the prohibition of malacha of Chol HaMoed, is from the Torah? Heich hetiru chachamim kam malachas lasis b'Chol HaMoed. How could the chachamim permit certain things? We quoted the Gemara. The Gemara says, Masru kasav l'chachamim. The Torah authorized the chachamim to determine what's permitted and what's forbidden. Where do you find such a thing? If Chol HaMoed is essentially a yomtiv, and the malachas are forbidden midoraisa, so where do you find that the sages have the authority to permit certain things if it's aser deraisa? Where do you find such a yomtiv where certain things are aser, certain things are mutter? The Rush brings an example. Kol davara avud. Anything in order to avoid a loss, you're allowed to perform malacha. If the prohibition of malacha is deraisa, how could the sages permit it in order to avoid a loss? We mentioned before, a worker who doesn't have what to eat, he has to earn money in order simply to provide for himself a livelihood. There's actually a question, by the way, what does it mean that the worker, he needs to work on Chol HaMoed, otherwise he won't have an income? So some say it means literally he'll starve, he doesn't have what to eat. The other opinion is that he has what to eat, he wants to work extra in order to enjoy the yomtiv and to be able to splurge on the yomtiv. So where do you find that if the malachas are forbidden midoraisa, how can we permit a worker who needs the extra income, how is he allowed to work? Heichen matzinu isur doiraisa. Where do we find an isur from the Torah where miktsasai aser or miktsasai mutter, where it's partially aser and partially mutter? Where do you find such a thing? So although we quoted the Gemara says Masru hakasa lechachamim, that the chachamim, the Torah authorized the chachamim to decide, to determine, but the Rabbeinu Tam is bothered with this concept. Where do you find such a thing that the chachamim can determine what's mutter and what's aser midoy raisa? So says the Rush in item Yud, Mikol hani rayos, from all of these proofs, from the Yushalmi that says that if it would be up to Rav Abba Bar Mamel, he was campaigning to abolish the prohibitions of Chol HaMoed because people were wasting their time. The other Gemara says that Chol HaMoed is only derabanan in contrast to inflicting a blemish to the Bechor. From Rabbeinu Tam's question that where do you find such a thing that it's partially mutter and partially aser? Because of these proofs, says the Rush, mistabra de malechas Chol HaMoed lemitzra ela midrabanan. I think it's more reasonable to assume that the malachas of Chol HaMoed are only rabbinically prohibited. Now we have to go back and deal with the sources. When the Gemara contrasts Chol HaMoed with Avelus, and the Gemara seems to say Avelus is rabbinic, Chol HaMoed is deraisa, the Gemara just means ke'en deraisa. It just means that it's as if it's deraisa. Why? Why is Chol HaMoed? Really, Chol HaMoed is only rabbinic, purely rabbinic. Midoraisa, it's a weekday. Why is Chol HaMoed forbidden? Because it's based on the psukim, the chachamim, and asmachta. The chachamim found various allusions in the pasuk, justifications to imposing rabbinic prohibitions. The chachamim want to create an aura. They want to create the Chol HaMoed to have a feel of a yomtiv. So the chachamim prohibited certain malachas, and they based it on the pasuk. When the Gemara says that because the Chol HaMoed is surrounded by yomtiv, it itself should be like a yomtiv. Or the Gemara says that we compare the intermediate days of Chol HaMoed to the first and the last day, and we say that it's a little bit like them and a little bit not like them. All of these things are just an asmachta. It's just an allusion in the pasuk. Really, the pasuk alludes to it. It's a basis. It's really just a basis for the chachamim to create these prohibitions. It's purely rabbinic. But the avelus is not even an asmachta. there's no allusion to it at all in the Torah. It's only based on Divrei Kabbalah, on the Navi. The Pasuk says that we compare the Avelis to a Chag, just like the Chag is forbidden in Malacha, so too the Avelis is forbidden for the Avel to perform Malacha. It's just based on a Pasuk in Kabbalah, in Nach, but really, the Malachas of Chol HaMoed themselves are purely rabbinic. And the Rush concludes, all the Psukim and the Drushes that the Gemara brings in Maseches Chagiga are all merely an Asmachta. It's just an allusion in the Pasuk, it's just an inference, but it doesn't have the force of a Deraisa, it's only rabbinic, and that explains why the rabbis can decide what they decided to Aser, what they decided to permit, because it's purely the Rabbanan, it's only an Asmachta. That's the opinion of the Rush. However, the Tur in Simen Tav Kuf Lamed Vav points out that the riff is in the back of the Gemara, the riff Rav Alfasi brings all the drushes of the Gemara in Chagiga as if they're real drushes, and he does not qualify that these drushes are merely asmachta. He brings the drushes, he brings the Gemara in Chagiga as is, as if it's deraisa. And the Rishonim also bring the Rashi and Maseches Sanhedrin and the Mefarshim Maseches Makas. There's a statement in the Gemara, Kol HaMavaze Es HaMoyadois, anybody who desecrates the Moed is Ki'ilu Oyvin Avodes Gachavim, it's as if he worshipped idols. A very powerful statement. What does it mean, Kol HaMavaze Es HaMoyadois? How did he desecrate the Moed? So some Rishonim learn it's referring to the Yomtif itself. If a person violates the Yomtif, it's as if he worshipped idols, because essentially he's denying all of the lessons that those Yom Tovim are there to teach. Imagine if a person violates Shavuos. Why is he violating Shavuos? Why isn't he observing Shavuos? Because he denies the fact that Hashem gave the Torah. Why is a person violating Sukkos and Pesach? Because he's denying the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and that Hashem provided for all of our needs in the desert in the Sukkah. So if a person violates the Yom Tov, it's analogous to worshipping idols. However, Rashi says that violating the Yom Tov, desecrating the Yom Tov, is referring to Chol HaMoed. Anybody who desecrates the Chol HaMoed is as if he worshipped idols, implying that the Malach of Chol HaMoed is deraisa. You wouldn't say such a severe penalty if it's merely rabbinic. It must be it's deraisa. So the Rif, who brings all of the drushes as is, Rashi, who says that the prohibitions of Chol HaMoed are very severe, all seem to hold that it's deraisa. So here comes the Ramban. The Ramban has a fascinating pshara. The Namuk Yosef brings that the Ramban was mefashir. The Ramban found the golden rule, the golden path. He found the compromise position, how to balance all of the conflicting sources. So let's take two examples. Let's take two examples. Davar ha'avud. We mentioned a few times. You're allowed to perform malacha on Chol HaMoed in order to avoid a loss. Davar ha'avud. However, we said that there are details. There are details about this. You can't exert yourself too much to avoid a loss. You're only allowed to perform a malacha to avoid a loss if it doesn't involve tircha. That's what the Gemara says. You can't have an overexertion. It's very hard to determine what's considered an exertion, what's not. You have to ask a posek, each case by case, what's considered to be an overabundance of exertion. However, the rule is that you can perform a malacha to avoid a loss, but the detail is that you can't exert yourself too much. You can't avoid tircha. It can't involve tircha. That's example number one. Another example is, we've been saying all along, you're allowed to perform a malacha to avoid a loss, but you can't schedule that task for Chol HaMoed. It has to just come up on its own. It can't be that you deliberately schedule that task for Chol HaMoed. Says the Ramban, the broad strokes, whatever the Chachamim say are mutter, right? Whatever the Chachamim say are mutter, for example, Davar HaAvod, these things are biblical. So the Torah prohibits malacha, and there are broad categories of what you're allowed to do. You're allowed to do malacha to avoid a loss. Says the Ramban, but the details, the restrictions in that clause, you can't schedule it for Chol HaMoed, it can't involve tircha, those details are only rabbinic. So whatever is usur deraisa, the broad strokes. You can't just for no reason at all, perform Halacha on Chalamoy. The Heterim, for example, Davar HaAvod, that's also Midaraisa, because he takes the Gemara literally, that the Torah gave over the authority to the Chachamim to determine what makes sense. What did the Torah mean to prohibit you from doing for a week long? And what did the Torah permit? You're allowed to perform Davar HaAvod. The details, though, that you can't schedule it, or it can't involve Tircha, those details are only rabbinic. So this is a beautiful pshara, this is a beautiful like compromise position, which would reconcile all the conflicting Gemaras. So on the one hand, when the Gemara says that the prohibitions of Chol HaMoed are d'oraisa, that's true. By and large, whatever you're not allowed to do is d'oraisa. For example, you can't just do malacha on Chol HaMoed for no reason at all. You can't just go and plow your field. It's something you can do afterwards. You can't just go and prune your trees. That's something you can do afterwards. You can't just do malacha, unnecessary malacha. That would be an isur d'oraisa, says the Ramban. That's why the Gemara derives it from Sukkim and from drushas. That's why Rashi says that if you desecrate the Chol HaMoed, it's as if you worship idols. Because by and large, the prohibitions of Chol HaMoed are d'oraisa. Now, why does the Gemara sometimes infer that why does the Gemara sometimes imply that the isur of Chol HaMoed is d'rabbanan? That's referring to various details. For example, once you're allowed to perform halacha to avoid a loss, when the Gemara says that it's not as bad as inflicting a blemish, because scheduling the malacha for Chol HaMoed is only rabbinic, says the Rabban, that's true. Once you're allowed to do malacha, to perform malacha to avoid a loss, that's a permit from the Torah. The prohibition to schedule, that's only rabbinic. When the Gemara compares Davar HaAvod to Avelis the Chol HaMoed, that's because the various malachas involved are only rabbinic. That is an Issa D'Rabbanan. So an Avel is an Issa D'Rabbanan, but Chol HaMoed would otherwise be an Issa D'Oraisa. But the details that are associated with that, that can only be an Issa D'Rabbanan. Now, yeah, so Mr. Shem, someone just mentioned about going to work on Chol HaMoed, in transaction, business. Mr. Shem will talk about that in the next year, about what's considered Davar HaAvod, what's not. So I'm not going into the details now, I'm just the broad strokes. So this is the Ramban's Pshara, and the Beis Yosef says that he likes the Ramban's Pshara the best. So let's just finish off, let's conclude with item Yud Gimel. Be'etzem, that means intrinsically, the Isra Malach of Chol HaMoed is deraisa. It's biblical in nature. The Chachamim have the power to determine what the Torah meant to prohibit and what the Torah meant to permit. Even those things that the Torah permitted, the Chachamim put certain guidelines in place that you can't abuse the permits. So the Torah says you're allowed to perform malachas and Chol HaMoed to avoid a loss, but you can't abuse that permit, so you can't deliberately schedule. You can't exert too much tircha. Those things are only rabbinic. So when the Gemara says, for example, that the person scheduled his malacha for Chol HaMoed, that's only an Issa D'Rabbanan, that's true. Because that detail of not scheduling, that's only D'Rabbanan. When the Gemara implies that it's an Issa D'Oraisa, that's because it's an Issa D'Oraisa. Now, the Yerushalmi that says that Rav Abba Bar Mamel, if it would be up to him, he would permit all the malachas, according to the Ramban, it's perfect. He's discussing all the extra details. He would have permitted Davar HaAvod of Tircha. He would have permitted you to schedule all of your appointments on Chol HaMoed deliberately in order to avoid a loss. That's what Yerushalmi was discussing. He was talking about all of these extras, all of these peripheral halachas, these details, the rabbinic details. Of course, Rav Abba Bar Mamel never meant to say that he'd let you do unnecessary malachas of Chol HaMoed. He'd only allow you, he would give you a green light to perform all the Davar HaAvods, anything. He'd even let you schedule. That's how the Ramban answers. Someone sent in a question, is there any reason to avoid driving a car on Chol HaMoed? It's very interesting because the Gemara says that you're allowed to horseshoe your horse, your donkey. You're allowed to sand down the hoofs in those days. If the donkey or the horse is walking on the pavement, so you don't want it's abrasive to the hoof, so you're allowed to sand down the hoofs to make the hoof of the horse or the donkey smooth. So So it says you're allowed to do these things on Chol HaMoed. The Rishonim say, but it's only if you need to ride the donkey for Chol HaMoed, or the horse for Chol HaMoed. You can't just do it if you want to ride the donkey for unnecessary reasons. So I actually mentioned, I actually saw Leo that the Poskim discuss, can you just drive in your car for no reason? If it's just as easy to walk, can you drive your car on Chol HaMoed? So I saw the Poskim say you're allowed to, because nowadays people enjoy the ride more than walking. So arguably, the actual driving of the car itself is a hana that you're getting on Chol HaMoed to avoid the tircha. But theoretically, you're right. Theoretically, just to perform malacha for no reason at all, that would be an issue. So Sam, we'll get to you in 1 second. Just to conclude, the Bir Halacha says, what's the difference if we treat the halachas as if they're deraisa, or if they're only durabon? What's the difference? At the end of the day, the guidelines, the categories are clear. So what difference does it make if it's deraisa or durabon? The Bir Halacha says the difference would be if you have a suffix. If there's ever a doubt in halacha, one person says it's mutter, one person says it's aser, would the attitude be to treat it strictly as if it's a deraisa, or would the attitude be to treat it leniently because it's suffix derabanan? That would depend on the Rishonim. The Bir Halacha is very strong that because there are so many Rishonim that indicate that it's deraisa, the Bir Halacha tends to feel that we should take a strict approach to Chol HaMoed and err on the side of caution. The Chazan Ish, I saw brought down, the Chazan Ish felt that people are not treating Chol HaMoed anymore with the proper respect. It's almost, I heard somebody say the expression that for us, Chol HaMoed is more chol than moed. I heard someone use that expression. So the Chazan Ish also observed that, and the Chazan Ish felt that we should take a stringent approach to Chol HaMoed simply to sort of like revive the mitzvah, to popularize, to resensitize ourselves to the sanctity of Chol HaMoed, and to take a strictest approach. And the Chazan Ish almost treated Chol HaMoed as if it was a yomtiv, as if it was an ordinary yomtiv, in order to sort of like revive, to reinstate the sensitivity towards the Chol HaMoed. So, Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll discuss the different types of Davar HaAvod, what's considered incurring a loss versus forfeiting foregoing profit. We'll talk about going to work on Chol HaMoed, and people can't just take off indefinitely, or you have responsibilities at work. What's considered to be a person runs a store? What are you allowed to buy and sell? Mitzvah, that'll be the topic for next week. Okay, Yasha Koyach, everybody.
Thank you.
This conference is no longer being recorded.
Sure.
Hi, Shkoyach. Sam, you had a point?
But an interesting